This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and welcome to The Rainbow Umbrella, the podcast where we talk about anything and everything under the rainbow. This month, I am lucky enough to be joined by Tania Huria and Beth Messenger. Welcome, ladies. It's so wonderful to have you here for this, I guess, women's health, perimenopause, menopause episode. A little bit of everything.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Thank you so much for being here. Before we kick off, can I just get you both to introduce yourselves, speak a little bit about the mahi that you do, so we have a point of reference for our listeners. Beth, would you like to start?
So my name is Beth Messenger. I'm the medical director at Sexual Wellbeing Aotearoa. Not long ago, I celebrated 20 years working for this organisation, which of course for a lot of that time was family planning. I'm a family planning and reproductive health specialist, so I do some clinical work as well as the medical director role here, and see quite a number of people with menopause and perimenopausal symptoms, which of course didn't mean that I was prepared when I started experiencing them myself.
That's fair enough. Kia ora and congratulations on 20 years. That's so cool. Yeah. And Tania?
Oh, well, kia ora koutou. Ngā mihi nui ki a koutou. Ko Tania Huria Takawingawa, he uri o Naitahu Ngā Te Mutunga ki Whare Kauri. Kia ora everybody. I'm Tania Huria and I'm the Director of Hauora Māori and Equity at Sexual Wellbeing Aotearoa. So a big part of my role is actually looking at our systems and processes and working alongside Beth and our other senior leadership team to make ensure that we are a responsive organisation and are an inclusive organisation.
Mm, beautiful. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your days to kōrero with me. As I've just mentioned to you, the kaupapa of this episode is slightly selfish. As I said, you know, perimenopause is slowly knocking on my door, so I thought it would be a good opportunity to have a kōrero because I know that I will not be the only person in this boat and the only person that probably has questions and thoughts and feelings that, you know, might be beyond Google, for example. So I guess what I wanted to start off with was a couple of the myths and things that I had come across about perimenopause and menopause, which I found quite interesting. And the one that struck me the most, because when I've had this conversation with other people, is they've turned around and said, oh, you're too young for that. So actually, perimenopause and menopause doesn't necessarily happen in your 50s, right? I'm, you know, late 30s, I guess. And, you know, like I said, slowly knocking on my door, it doesn't have to be when you're in the 50s, right?
Yeah, that's right. So although we don't really start expecting perimenopause to hit until about 45, and then for vast majority of people to have passed through menopause by about 55. Women certainly do experience perimenopausal symptoms, and some women go into menopause before the age of 45. And they're actually a group that we really need to pick up and recognize, because people who have whether gone into menopause before 45 probably should be on hormone therapy just for their overall well-being, never mind any of the rest of the symptoms they may be experiencing.
Yeah, it was very interesting to me to kind of start feeling things and knowing things like temperature regulation, for example. Apparently that's not a thing that I can do anymore. Also, night driving is so much worse. I've had astigmatism for as long as I can remember, but driving at night, there's no point because you can't see.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I went through early perimenopause, and, you know, as a Māori woman, you know, I kept thinking I was pregnant again. You know, I was like, am I pregnant? But no, I was going through perimenopause before 40. So it was a real shock to the system for me. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess alongside that, other myth is that the idea that it doesn't last that long. Actually, everybody's different. It's going to last as long as it lasts, right?
And I guess this is where sometimes the terms that we use don't help, because we use menopause to mean perimenopause. And we also use it to mean postmenopause. And so menopause itself as kind of that moment when it's been a year since your periods have stopped,
Mm.
but how long your perimenopause will be and how long your postmenopause will be will depend on a whole load of other things. And of course, postmenopause is the whole of the rest of your life. And that doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to need treatment for the whole of the rest of your life. But, certainly, this idea that, a year of hormone therapy would be enough and then you come off it and everything will be fine is that is definitely a myth.
For sure. And another one that I picked up on was the fact that it's not just hot flashes and emotional mood changes. It's so much more than that. Like I mentioned, the driving, there's, vaginal dryness, there's pain during intercourse potentially, there's all of these things. And also, you can still get pregnant. It's not impossible to get pregnant. And that potentially is quite a significant problem for someone and possibly the most alarming thing that doesn't get talked about, right?
And because if you have a late period at perimenopause, you just assume that that's because that's what happens at perimenopause. So some of these pregnancies are detected late, which is an issue because they're high risk. So we don't want to miss those either.
No. God, there are so many
Um,
layers
but
to
yeah,
this onion.
the range of symptoms is enormous. And, we have focused on hot flushes, and that's partly because for a long time, hormone therapy was only for hot flushes and only if they were really terribly disabling. And, otherwise, you should just manage things. But actually, some people don't get hot flushes, but it doesn't mean that they aren't experiencing perimenopausal symptoms.
And that's another thing. I've discovered so many different myths doing my research for this quarter. But another thing that comes up is that HRT is dangerous or bad for you. Actually, every person experiencing perimenopause or menopause that I've spoken to have said HRT changed their lives, made everything so much better. So we want to nip in the bud the concept that this is dangerous, right? Obviously, seek medical guidance,
Yes.
but.
So there are some people who shouldn't be using hormone therapy because the risks for them probably do, are greater than the benefits that they're going to get. And there are other ways of managing menopausal symptoms. Hormone therapy isn't the only option. But for most women at perimenopause, hormone therapy is actually safe and it can probably reduce the risk of things like heart disease. The problem comes when we don't start it until long after menopause. And women starting it later after menopause, so sort of 10 years after their last period, are at higher risk, and it probably isn't safe for them to use in terms of risk of causing heart disease and things.
That's important information to know. I'm also very conscious of the fact that this is all because everyone's different. We have a kind of sweeping generalization, korero, which is fine because there is no one size fits all. But I'm very interested, Tania in particular, in the Te Ao Māori perspective of this because I'm aware that our point of reference is a Pākehā or colonial point of view, right? So can we have a wee korero about the Te Ao Māori perspective on perimenopause and menopause?
Yeah, and I think that there's a couple of things, and I just wanted to pick up on Beth's point about, access to treatments. And, like everything in Māori health, access to best practice for a Māori woman or a Māori person who has a cervix going through perimenopause can be really difficult. And actually, we need to ensure that our spaces are inclusive and understand that actually Māori women go through menopause, Pacific women go through menopause, women that live with a disability go through menopause. So the menopause machine, if you really look at it, looks slightly in as we don't see ourselves in those spaces and places. And so actually we have an obligation to ensure that we understand what that transition means for different peoples. And so from a Māori perspective, so the kupu Māori for menopause is ruahinitanga, so that second phase of womanhood. I am by no means an expert in that mana wahine area, but to me as a Māori woman, it beautifully encompasses that transition into that wisdom phase. So it is about having the gravitas to give someone a bit of a, a verbal clip round the ear. It provides you with that structure of actually sharing wisdom, of spending time with whānau, if you have that privilege. And this is the thing, is that actually When we're thinking about rohinitanga and that transition through into that second phase of womanhood, you've got to think about what that journey's looked like along that whole reproductive lifespan. And for many Māori women and for many Māori who have a cervix, our journey through the health system across that whole reproductive lifespan has been fraught with racism, with I guess that colonial lens on what Māori women should look like, be like, act like, particularly around reproduction. And so there's a whole lot of layers, but in its essence, that second phase into second womanhood is a beautiful transition, and I think it's something that we need to explore further and understand.
Absolutely. And like I said, when I was doing a bit of research on this, that whole concept, like it's so beautiful and such a beautiful way to look at it. Because I know for some people, entering this phase can be, it's emotive, your hormones are changing, your body is changing, things are happening. But that perspective is so beautiful and makes it seem like a second phase, a second chapter in your life, sort of thing.
But we still need, support,
Of course.
like there's still the symptom side, and that's the thing. It's like we still need to get access to best practice around, how to manage our symptoms, but also within the context that actually for te ao Māori and that mātauranga, it is a transition into this beautiful space. So, and actually we need our clinicians and people that work in this menopause space to understand those concepts to actually support women through it.
Absolutely. And as well as access to support and resources, what other ways can we support wahine going through this phase?
Well, I think it's really important that if you are working with Māori women that you listen, that their priorities might be different, and it might be hard to adjust to those priorities as a person that's providing that care, but actually you need to listen to the realities of those priorities. Let's be honest, some treatments for symptoms are expensive, and so what is the reality of that for wahine Māori and in respect to being able to have the privilege to be able to access those? And what are we doing as a I guess as a service and as a health service to ensure that actually there are places and spaces for Māori women to be able to access best practice care no matter where they live and whether or not they can I guess what they earn to be able to fund that. So that's really, really important. And I guess it is around understanding that, for a long, 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 long period of time, and I'm sure I don't need to tell either of you, women's health has been, and I know I don't have to tell Beth, women's health has been underfunded exponentially, like for hundreds of years. It's been, put in the corner and in a dark place, and we don't talk about that thing. And if you really think about who are our most at need in our society, then that actually, the impact of that is exponential. So actually we need to adjust and be able to provide those services for all women and people with a cervix that live in Aotearoa.
Absolutely. Can we also, if we're making requests, can we please get rid of the whole BMI thing? Can we get rid of that? Because that's nonsense. We could do a whole episode on that, I'm sure, but
Yes, it's not the best method measure. It's very flawed, but it is at the moment the marker that we use, and it is an important health issue. I mean, one of the things that sort of a couple of things have sort of come up for me as Tanya was talking, and one of them is about women having a tendency to normalize things and put up with things. And if you're prioritizing everybody else's well-being above your own, that's even more likely to be an issue. But there are changes that happen as you approach menopause, which can be normal and just a part of that change, but also can be a sign of things are going wrong and you actually need medical treatment, not just something that's going to make you feel better. And one of those things is change to bleeding patterns, which can actually be a sign of cell changes in the uterus that can develop into cancer. And the reason I've come to that with a BMI comment is that BMI, for all its flaws, is currently our biggest risk factor for those changes. So the higher your BMI, the bigger your risk is. But I realised that BMI is terribly flawed because you just need to look at the All Blacks to know how it doesn't work. Not that the All Blacks have a
And the
uterus
black
to
ferns.
worry about,
And the
but
black ferns.
it probably does apply to the Black Ferns too, yes, because, muscle is heavy. So there must surely be better measures, but it's not. Obesity is a critical issue for us as a nation.
And I'm aware
But
that
yeah.
it's, a double-edged sword because you're absolutely right. There are things that need to be paid attention to. But as a 4 foot 11 woman, 45 kilos is not an ideal weight for me. But according to my BMI, it is. So
I share your pain because I'm a little bit taller than that, but I have very short legs in comparison to my height. So if my legs were a little bit longer, I'd be a lot taller, but I probably wouldn't weigh a lot more, and my BMI would be a lot less. So it's a flawed measure, for sure, for lots of reasons. But the issue that we're trying to measure with it is an issue that we can't ignore it because it's going to be a critical issue for us. Having said that, I know that there are women who will be declined hormone therapy because it's a risk factor, and that bothers me because it's not that big a deal. And actually, in the meantime, their quality of life is an issue.
Yeah, and again, we could do probably a whole other episode on this, but as someone who has been almost declined their contraceptive pill multiple times because of the BMI issue, that's very close to me, that one. So that's an interesting point as well, and something to keep in the back of my mind. It is, yes. There are, again, so many layers to this onion, right? We
Yeah,
can
there really is.
Okay. So I think we've covered off some really important things, and this conversation has been absolutely beautiful. And like I said, we could probably go for ages, but I'm aware that Tanya has another hui to go to. She's a very important and desired lady.
No, I'm just not very good at my time management. That's probably more of the
I appreciate your honesty. No,
issue.
so before we go, if like I said, we've covered off some myths and misconceptions, and we've covered off some important perspectives to take into consideration when thinking about perimenopause and menopause, whether it's for us or friends, whānau, anyone. If there's one thing that you could leave our listeners with that it's important for them to know about this phase of life, what would it be?
I think as Pākehā, we have a lot to learn from, say, our Māori. It's not the end of life, it's the beginning of a new stage. And if you are having difficulty making that transition, ask for help. And if the first person you ask doesn't listen, find someone else because the help is out there, but it isn't necessarily easy to access. Menopause care can get quite specialized. And so GPs do a lot of menopause care, but sometimes it's just more complicated than they can manage in their consultations. So find someone else to help you if you need to.
Yeah, and I would reiterate that, especially from my own personal experience. Having perimenopause symptoms early, being a Māori woman, and I know my way around the health system, and not being able to have access the care that I needed at that time. So it really is about find that person that will listen to you. Actually, talk to whānau, talk to your aunties, talk to, your cousins, and share your experience. Like, that's really, really important. The more we talk about it, I mean, often within Te Ao Māori, we talked about a whole bunch of stuff to do with sexual and reproductive health. We're not, it was out there. It's in our pūrākau. It's our creation story, and so we just need to reclaim that and keep talking about it, and actually find someone that will provide you with the care that you deserve.
I actually heard that pūrākau for the first time the other day in class, and I was like, that's amazing. That's very cool. Very cool story. Excellent. Well, thank you so much again, both of you, for being here. This has been an awesome chat. I'm sure, like I've said multiple times, there's lots that we could keep talking about, but this has been absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This show is kindly supported by the Rainbow New Zealand Charitable Trust. The Rainbow Umbrella theme song is by Paul S. Allen and Beth. Check them out on Spotify. New episodes of The Rainbow Umbrella are available every fourth Thursday on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts.
Do you have an idea for an episode or something you would like to korero about? Get in touch at rainbowumbrellapod@gmail.com.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.